From a religious point of view, there are two kinds of kings. There are those kings who understand that all authority comes from God, and that, like every other gift or privilege, that they are only caretakers of that authority. In the books of the kings of Israel, it says that this kind of king did what was right in the sight of the Lord. The other kind of king is one who uses his power and authority as if it belongs to him, the so-called divine right of kings. The books of Kings identify them as those who did evil in the sight of the Lord. Unfortunately, there are a relatively small number in the first group. And while we don't have too many kings in our experience today, there are many who have authority, prime ministers and presidents, and even those who manage people in businesses and organizations, who fall into both of those kind of categories. Where I worked at the City of Calgary, there was a time where there was a new manager after the previous one had been there for a long time. And he was evaluating everything that went on, and almost everyone was grumbling and anxious about the changes that appeared to be coming. In a meeting of our whole group one time, employees were questioning this process until the new manager, clearly finally frustrated, blurted out, "Look, the king is dead. Long live the king. Get used to it." That kind of broke the tension there and changed everyone's attitude. He was right, we all realized. He's the new manager, and he will do things in his own way. He will exercise authority how he sees it fit. The passage today from Daniel is very rich with images of true authority. Through it, we can perceive what is true wisdom also. Nebuchadnezzar was not a king of Israel, but the Babylonian king that God was using to lead his people back to himself. To the king, God gave authority to lead his people away from the promised land, away from the temple that they loved, into a time of reflection about all of the ways that they had abandoned God, that they had turned from God. In his God-given wisdom, true wisdom, Daniel recognized God's authority in that earthly king. Listen to how he puts it. "You, O king, the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the might, and the glory." That's amazing language, isn't it? When we come to a time where we think about, as we approach Advent, as we come to the time of the birth of the King of Kings into our experience, into our lives, the one who is the source of all power, might, and glory. And yet Daniel refers to Nebuchadnezzar in this way. So this king had a dream. The king knows that his dream has great significance, and he wants to be sure that he understands it correctly. That's why he demands that whoever is going to interpret it must have a kind of a divine knowledge. But the sages, his sages, the Babylonian wise people, recognize their limitations. They say, "There is no one on earth who can reveal what the king demands." Finally, though, they call Daniel, the Israelite, who has long been recognized to have this kind of divine insight. So Daniel tells the king that his dream tells the king about the huge and terrifyingly brilliant statue that he sees in his dream, with a head of gold, a chest of silver, thighs of bronze, then iron mixed with clay. And each of these are symbols of earthly kingdoms, he tells Nebuchadnezzar, earthly authority, all of which will be smashed by a single stone. They are broken into pieces, and they disappear entirely before the stone, which, as he says, becomes a great mountain and fills the whole earth, and which shall last forever. Again, incredible insight when we look back at this from a Christian point of view as we come to the time of Advent. So this interpretation has divine, not human, authority behind it. As Daniel explains, the great God has informed the king what shall be hereafter. The dream is certain, and its interpretation trustworthy. Daniel knows that he is the medium for this message, not the source of it. So we are on the threshold of the great time of preparation for the coming of the Messiah once more. When we go to the gospel, we see that those who are questioning Jesus are asking for true wisdom from the one who has true authority to interpret what is to come. The gold of the temple and even its beautiful stones will be overcome by the one whom we call the stone that the builders rejected, the cornerstone of our faith. Luke records Jesus, who is the source of the divine authority, who is the fulfillment of history and the culmination of human destiny, explaining what is to come. Jesus is foretelling the coming devastation of Jerusalem, which was confirmed a generation later, using a lot of Old Testament images. The Romans did indeed trample the city and the temple in 70 AD. Now we know that there's never been a time in human history when wars, earthquakes, famines, and plagues have not been a part of the picture. Since any one of these events and phenomena can occur without warning or notice, it is better to be prepared. That's Jesus' point to them. And preparation consists in always looking for Christ in every person and circumstances. Jesus is saying, you will see these things, but don't worry about them. Do not be afraid. Despite the wars and the many signs that our human-made temples are in danger, Jesus says, do not be afraid. This stuff is going to happen. It will continue to happen. Stay faithful to the Son of Man, who will come in true glory. Everything we build will pass away, despite how we feel that what we have built in our culture is somehow the ultimate in authority, the ultimate in permanence. The foundation stones of our own life need to be built on the hope of what is permanent and truly holy. What an exciting time as we approach the Advent season, where we watch and listen and wait in anticipation of the coming fresh into our lives, the true wisdom of God, and the source and the manifestation of all true authority. And so we can say again with Daniel that he is trustworthy.